Welcome to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Each week on this program, Jeff and his guests share their expertise, personal anecdotes, and the latest industry news to keep you in the loop. Now, to provide you with insight and help you navigate the consistently changing world of real estate lending, here is your host for The Mortgage Voice, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in to the show. Each and every week, we come to you via radio, as well as a number of different podcasts. The number of different podcasts that we're on, Apple Music Play, Google, Stitcher, Spreaker. We're on many other podcasts, as well as terrestrial radio stations. And those stations are in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Las Vegas, Nevada, up in Tahoe at K-Tahoe, and in Southern California, KMET and KCAA in San Bernardino and Riverside, our original two affiliates that we've had, oh my gosh, 4, 5, 6 years now. The reach is big. The interest in mortgages is still pretty high, although the only thing higher than the interest, obviously, is the rates going up. And for anybody out there who has been trying to lock a rate over the last week to 10 days, it's really, really difficult. You'll get into a discussion with your lender about what programs and what rates, and bagosh begone, by the next day, the rates have already gone up. So trying to lock a loan and how to do that is really, there's certain things that every lender needs, every loan officer that you talk to or every officer at the bank needs in order to actually say, okay, I can secure this rate right now. And that, of course, is your loan application and the ability to repay the loan and a number of other factors, your credit. And so when those things get submitted, at that point, you can lock a loan. But usually you need an appraisal, and the lock rates, is about 30 days. A lot of people go for 30 days or 45 days. As I told you last week, the number of lenders out there in the non-QM world is not the Fannie and Freddie world. It's not the world that actually is very straightforward. It's more loans that you would say, oh my gosh, you can get a loan and only give them that much information, those type of loans. Now, they're good loans. Most of them are secured by equity in the property. For instance, if you want a bank statement loan, if you want a 24 or 36 month bank statement loans, you want a DSCR, which is that debt service loan where the property itself pays for the mortgage, or you want some other kind of I-10 loan, you want no tax return loans. All of these types of loans require at least 15%, maybe 20%. Now, some lenders may go as low as 10%, but certainly you're going to have equity in the property, and that's really the security we didn't have back in 08, right? But we do have today. Security in these properties based on these types of loans are the way by which we can say, hey, this is a pretty good loan. These people are pretty secure, and the loans themselves are pretty secure. If you need the loan lock-in rate on that type of loan, you're obviously going to pay more in terms of the rate. If you're, let's say, today's rate is 5%, usually on a looking at about non-QM loan, about a point higher. So you're going to play 6, maybe 6.5. And this is all dependent on your credit, too. If you have a credit score between 620 and 640, well, your rate's going to be a heck of a lot different in the non-QM world than if your credit score is between 720 and 760. It just is. That's the way it is. And as a result of that being the way it is, having to want to lock the loan, you get in a non-QM loan in a situation whereby you've given them the loan application, you've allowed credit to be pulled, you have chosen a specific program with a specific lender tied to a specific rate based on those three criteria. You want to lock that loan. If you lock that loan, what can happen if you don't give yourself long enough leeway, i.e. at least 45 days in terms of the lock rate? If you give yourself 30 days, you may find yourself at the end of that lock rate not being able to fund the loan yet because you need some more documentation. Usually in the non-QM world, yes, it may be fewer documents, but they may come up with additional documentations required towards the end of the loan when your lock is about ready to expire. And anybody who's experienced that will know, especially in an ascending market, ascending rate market like we're in today, that during a situation like that, you're pretty much at the mercy of the lender. If they delay your loan and they bust your lock rate based on the amount of time that you had it locked for, you're going to end up paying more, or your loan officer or the loan company that you're doing the loan with or the lender, they're going to have to come up with an exception or buy down the rate. And nobody wants to see that because nobody's happy when money gets lost or loan lock-in rates get busted. And these are the things that we're dealing with right now in this type of market. Let's talk a little bit about rates, right? 30-year fixed rate loan today, on average, 5.35%. 5.35%. Yowzer. That's amazing. I can remember, and this sounds silly. Usually when someone starts a sentence with, I can remember, they're talking about their childhood. No, we're talking 6 months ago. The rates were 3.5. I mean, realistically, this is the fastest rate hike I've ever seen. And I've been around since the 80s doing loans. And so when you see a rate hike environment like that, that's why this lock-in becomes so critical, especially in a purchase when you really have, you know, I mean, let's face it, property prices are way too high, probably going to get a little bit higher before they get softer. What do I mean by that? When rates go up, the demand for housing falls. When other costs go up, the rate for housing falls. Why? Because you only have so much money that you make every month, and you have to have a debt-to-income ratio of a certain percentage in order to qualify for a loan. If you don't have that, well, forget it. You're not going to qualify for a loan. So as that happens, as more and more people get squeezed out of the market, that's right, more houses become available. When more houses come available, the price eventually drops. Usually takes about 6 months for a seller to realize, hey, I better drop the price. And that's a whole nother scenario. We're not there yet, but I think what we've seen is a bit of softening in the real estate market, a bit of softening for instance, more housing on the market this week than last week. Now, we're not talking in terms of percentages 10% more or 15 or 20% more. No, we're talking about 3 to 5% more. And nationally, well, that can add up, but essentially, we are in a stagnant market whereby the housing that does come up, they'll have less people looking to buy it, but you'll have more of an opportunity to purchase. However, again, with the rates going up and the way non-QM works, yes, it's a lot of stress in the marketplace. Okay, 15-year 4.65. The FHA is at 4.87. 4.44 is a jumbo. 4.09 is a 5-1 ARM. Now, the 2-year is at 2.598, and the 10-year is at 2.94. Now, the dreaded inversion has reinverted as it did last week, as we said on the show, and what we've got now is almost 0.4% between the 10-year and the 2-year, and that's says a little bit more about what's happening in the economy. And what is happening in the economy is that a lot of people out there in the work world are noticing that, you know what, they have a lot more leverage on their boss than they used to. And that's a good thing for employers and employees. Why? Because paying employees more money, even though you're going to make less money, is a good thing for the economy overall. And the economy overall is really something that is going to stave off any kind of recession, especially if people keep buying and purchasing. We see Amazon numbers up. We see Walmart numbers up. We see a lot of retail numbers up. And by the way, we're about ready to get into, well, let's see, what's the date today? The 18th, 19th? Okay, so at the recording of the show on the 19th, what I see here is the economy looking okay. We do see some headwinds in terms of inflation, but also last week as we talked, the inflation numbers are somewhat more positive than we thought they'd be. Now, granted, 8.5% is the highest it's been since 1981, but you take out fuel, and you take out gas, fuel, heating oil, all that stuff, which is non-core related. We saw a very small rate of increase. I think it's 6.35% rate of increase on inflation year over year. That particular number, we really are going to start to watch more and more closely. With the Fed raising the short-term interest rates the way they have, and we're looking at May with another half a point, we'll be harping on that for quite a bit. And, of course, the war in Ukraine. Both of these items are, it's a wait and see is what I'm saying. We know that the economy is doing well. We know that real estate, we may see some more product on the market as the real estate market slows down. Now, the real estate market, you know, 1 in 9 people in the U.S. work in the real estate world, whether it be in building the house, or whether it be in financing the house, or anything and everything in between, when it comes to in regards to the house, whether it's the maintenance or building or satisfying the mortgage, or the real estate agents who show the properties, all of these people involved, it's a big, big element in the economy. And so when we're looking to the real estate world, if it does slow down, and by the way, there's a couple of lenders that are really in danger of going out of business. One of the articles that I was reading today, some lenders won't survive. That's absolutely true. Anyway, lots more to come. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@MalibuFunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show each and every week. We come to you via our studios out here in Ventura, California. We're on a number of different podcasts, 10 different podcasts, whether it be Stitcher or Spreaker or Podclips.io or Google or Apple Music Play. All of these are places where you can go to and look up Jeff Barton, the Mortgage Voice. And you can also say that you like what you hear. If you do that, it really provides us with an opportunity to reach more people. And reaching more people is the way by which we can bring the message of what's happening in the mortgage and real estate world to you as the consumer out there trying to wend your way through this incredibly difficult time with rates rising. Occasionally we bring to the show people who are impacting their communities in a positive way. And I've known Lena, I think now for what, 4 or 5 years, Lena, at least, maybe more?
No, I think it's about 5, 6 maybe.
Okay, and it's Lena Walther, and she works at Awareness is Prevention, which talks about trafficking, child trafficking in the Las Vegas area, but really it's a national problem, and I wanted to bring her on to bring the topic up. It's something that needs to be talked about more and more, because the way headlines go, they sort of get in the way of really the day-to-day and what's in front of you. Lena, how are you, first off?
I'm doing good.
Okay, tell us about what's happening over at Awareness is Prevention. How's your year been? What's happening?
Yeah, let me tell you, we used to do a lot of training for different groups, including law enforcement, and we were in the schools, high school and middle school, and did a lot of training. Well, the pandemic hit, and schools were closed.
Right.
So that whole program disappeared, and the same thing with training other groups, because you couldn't meet anywhere. You couldn't meet with other people. Nothing was open, and you were not allowed to gather a lot of people in one place.
Right.
So we had to change a little bit. We were contacted by an organization in the UK, Internet Protection of Children, IPOC, and they wanted to have an American partner because they couldn't operate a nonprofit in the US. So we partnered up with them, and we have been going after some online platforms that are really, really turning into pure pornographic sites with traffickers targeting minors. And the worst one right now is called OnlyFans.com.
Yep.
Sounds very, very, very normal, nothing to it, but it's turned into a porn site. And the worst part about OnlyFans is they have a very sophisticated paywall, so law enforcement cannot really penetrate it. But once you are a subscriber are the ones that pay for what they see. The content provider are that we go after the kids, the minors that put up videos and photos of themselves. And now the subscribers can get in direct contact with the kids that put stuff up, and they communicate. And many of these subscribers are traffickers. They are targeting the minors. And they can also find out through the computer's IPO address where they are, and they can look them up in person in many cases. When we had no success going after the platforms, is far too much money involved, and OnlyFans is actually owned by a Russian, and there's no way they're going to listen to anything. So then we realized the people that are handling the transactions is Visa and MasterCard. So then we have been contacting Visa and MasterCard.
Right.
And MasterCard is actually listening to us. Visa is not. It's illegal for them to handle merchandise transactions for minors. It's totally illegal. And we want them to force the online platforms to have age verification, because there is no such thing right now.
So
that's where we are.
That's, well, first of all, you've described a horrible situation.
Yep, it is horrible. It is beyond horrible, and people don't realize how bad this is, because it's kind of hidden. Everything in today's world happens online.
Yep.
Nothing happens in the parks, in the schools, in the shopping malls anymore. Everything is online. And that is because of the pandemic. That's what caused this whole epidemic with online. Kids have been sitting in front of their computers,
yep,
practically the whole time, and they don't understand the dangers with it.
Tell me, describe to me how someone would get sucked in. What is the typical type of interaction that would get somebody on the path to sex trafficking? I mean, online,
yeah,
to...
Well,
how does it happen?
Let's start with the dangers. Even if they don't get trafficked, you know, it takes a lot of grooming. It takes a long time.
Yep.
But let's say here now you have a young girl, 12, 13 years old, and now she's being contacted by this who she has no idea who it is. She probably thinks it's a 17-year-old guy.
Right.
And he says, well, he wants to see a picture, and she sends a picture, and he pays her $100 or whatever. Now he wants to see maybe if she can take her shirt off, and he will pay $200. And, you know, that's how it starts.
I see.
And he says, you are so pretty. You are beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And blah, blah, blah. And, you know, their kids are very impressed by people that are charming to them. And now what happens, now he has all these pictures and might be videos, and it might be even worse than just taking the shirt off. And he himself, in a lot of times, will sell it to a porn site,
mm-hmm,
or many porn sites. And now this poor little kid is all over the porn sites.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't remove it. It's devastating what can happen.
And
that's not even being trafficked. That's just being exploited.
The prevention of this is just not to go on these sites, obviously, but you say...
Well, but, you know, it's not only OnlyFans. It normally starts with TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, all these sites that they contact the young kids and say, oh, let me help you get on OnlyFans. You can make so much money, da-da-da. And that's how to get on there.
Now, this being an international, obviously, problem, are a lot of these U.S.-based? Are they European-based? Are they Far Eastern, African-based?
OnlyFans started in the U.K.
Right, okay. And and because...
It is international.
Right.
It's not only the U.S., but U.S. tends to be really bad.
Really bad because there's a lack of sophistication by law enforcement?
Well,
or?
No, not at all. Law enforcement is doing what they can. It seems to be a total fascination with porn in this country.
Oh, I see.
Child porn. Yeah, more so than in a lot of other countries.
Yeah, how do you, or how does one who's listening to the show, hearing this, how do they get involved in helping prevention? Is it just staying on top of what your kids are doing? Is it joining groups? Is it, what does somebody do?
Well, parents have to get involved. Parents have to really monitor what their kids are doing. And one of the problems was when Google gave computers to all the students right when the pandemic started. They gave computers to the students so they could do the homework. Well, there were no safety features on it.
Mm-hmm.
They had access to whatever. Now they have put safety features on, but it's a little late, 2 years late.
Right.
So that was the first problem. And you know, kids and parents didn't know what they were doing. They figured they're sitting and doing the schoolwork.
Right.
Parents really, really have to get involved. It's essential.
And if someone wanted to, I don't know, is there a place or a way by which they can help your organization do what you do?
Well, you know, we actually work a lot with the congressional leaders, legislators in Washington, D.C., that have written many letters to Department of Justice, to the financial sectors and all that. And we had one letter that went with 102 signatures. by Congress people. That's a lot.
That's a lot. Yep.
Yeah. But, well, we accept donations through our website. That's the best way to help us.
Okay.
Because we have to spend a lot of money to doing what
right.
we're doing. And
tell us how to do that. What's the address of the web address, please?
AIPNV.org. AIPNV.org. NV stands for Nevada.
Well, you know, we're up against our clock here, and I really want to have you back again. This is a terrible situation, only getting worse, and the pandemic seemed to make it worse.
Yeah, it is. The pandemic has ruined it for kids.
Oh, man. Lena, thank
you. School closures.
Thanks very much for coming on. We'll have you back again soon.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. And this is Lena Walther from Awareness is Prevention. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in to the show. You know, we are on a number of different radio stations, and we are in three different states, five different radio stations, from Albuquerque, New Mexico, to Las Vegas, up to Lake Tahoe, and certainly in the Inland Empire in Southern California, San Bernardino, and Riverside. All of these stations, whether it's KMET, K-Ship, whether it's K-Mine, K-Tahoe, there's a whole bunch of them, KCAA, they all carry the show and the show archives. If you go to any of these radio stations, you can look up Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice. Click on that you like the show. There's a lot of need for mortgage information and friendly information, too. Information that you can access and not be sold something by way of the used car tactics that are always... And by the way, I was on silly site today, and I was trying to fill out a form, and the first thing they did is, oh, you can't print this. You got to pay us first. I'm like, okay. So I went to pay, and it was like, no, it was subscription. I was like, oh, forget it. Anyway, someone who is not like that is April Lopez, who joins us from Nations Direct to talk a little bit about what's going on at Nations, also what's happening in the mortgage industry. April, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. As you well know, the rates have been just... it's been hard to sell loans and keep a lock for 30 to 45 days without, you know, seeing the rates skyrocket. How are you handling the fact that the rates are rising when you do have a lock and the lock gets busted? Are you allowing a continuation? Are you buying down the rate? Do you have to reprice? How are you doing that?
Well, so the nice thing with Nations Direct is if you have a loan lock and it's your conventional or government product, you are still allowed to do extensions on those locks, even in this volatile market. So we aren't like other lenders who might be breaking locks or might even be on, you know, not honoring your current locks. And so if it's an all-prime loan, which we can explain later, we are letting those only have their current lock period, and then we are making reprice on market rates just because of the volatility.
Yeah, I think... As I was talking earlier in the show, the way it is and how you have to look at either a purchase, obviously there's not a lot of refis on this. Oh, there's some, but not a lot. You have to look at this purchase in terms of how the lender looks at it and trying to understand the way money, you know, I mean, nobody's wanting to lend money and lose money, and to trying to get all the documents that you need for that purchase up front prior to submission. Do you think that's the best idea, best approach?
Absolutely. You know, I find that the most successful loan officer or broker in the industry is not only getting their client, their buyer, pre-approved ahead of time. That means you should have all their documents ready to go so that when they get their offer accepted in a purchase world, that you're just plugging in an address and you're moving forward. Now, I will tell you, in this volatile market from January of this year to March, because of the increase in rates, a borrower who recently was pre-approved, you know, has now sent their payment has since gone up $500 a month. So it's important that, you know, if your pre-approval lapsed for 30 to 45 days, it's a good idea to go ahead and get reapproved and have those consumers, your buyers, go back to the loan officers and brokers and say, I know the rates have changed. I know we weren't locked in. Can you please, you know, evaluate my income and the interest rates?
No, I think that's an excellent idea. Anything that you can do to gain an edge, especially if there's an outdated pre-approval letter out there, you got to really get on top of it because, as you say, the payment goes up, and therefore, are you still qualified? Can you still prove ability to repay? All these things are the most important when it comes to a seller looking at your offer. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, it's, you know, there is, because there is a shortage of inventory, even with the increased rates, because the inventory is, still short, there's
right.
still tons of buyers. So we are seeing, you know, a little bit of apprehension with the buyers who, you know, regularly their interest rate's gone up. Maybe we should rent another year. So
right.
we are seeing that, and we are seeing a lot more government business, which is FHA and VA loans coming back into the market because those rates are still a lot lower than your conventional, and
yep.
we are seeing a lot more of those.
Okay, interesting. You talk about rate and about where rates are going and different ways by which you can maybe get a lower rate if you go with a different type of program. What do you see at Nations? What's happening there? What's the volume like for certain types of loans versus others?
Well, you know, definitely when we are seeing a lot more government business come into play, so the conventional loans, like the current par rate, for instance, on a conventional loan, is in the mid fours. So 4.5 or a high balance loan is reaching 5%. You can still get an FHA loan right around 3.625.
Oh, that's good.
And it's more palatable.
Yeah, absolutely does. Now there's the MIP. Have they revised the mortgage insurance premium in the last few weeks, month?
They have not. And
right.
you know, there hasn't been any talk of that. They actually had at one point said they were going to increase the upfront MI back to 2%, but nothing has changed. And also with the looser guidelines with government, it's allowing more buyers to continue to have buying power with their approvals on the government product.
You know, there's so much speculation about because the rates have gone up and refinances have really died out, gone down 60% from last year, that a lot of lenders are in trouble, or that they may, have issues as the year progresses. Now, I know Nations is a pretty secure bank. Tell the people who are listening about why it's not only important to get the rate and the program, but also the type of lender that you're working with for the security that they provide to the loan and the loan financing.
Absolutely. I mean, when you're dealing with a lender, I always tell my brokers, my loan officers, my partners, they tell their buyers, listen, you should always be pre-approving with three different banks. And yes, you might want to go to a Bank of America and a Wells Fargo because they have this, history and they're large banks. But if you deal with the middleman and you deal with the brokers and they have 20 different options they can go to, that you deal with a lender who has been around, who is selling directly to Fannie and Freddie, they are going to be the ones that are going to want to make your loan close. When you deal sometimes with a larger bank, they're kind of like the DMV. You know,
right.
that you next, you're next in line.
Yep.
And as you know, it has to fit the box. They're not willing to take your explanation on why you might have missed a payment because they don't have time. Because think about all of the business that they're getting in. So I feel that the middle of the the middleman, which becomes the broker, not going directly to the bank, and us as a lender at Nations, where we do, $3+ billion of business a year, and we're there to continue with our partnerships with our brokers and with our brokers' buyers.
Okay, the million-dollar question is, how high are rates going to go, and do you think that the Fed funds rate is going to affect the mortgage market more than it currently is?
You know, interesting. The Feds haven't raised the rates, and we're already at 4.5.
Right.
So it
right.
looks like we're going to end the year, higher, of course.
Yep.
I think we're going to be approaching, for sure, the 5%. I mean, we're already there with the high balance loan amount.
Yep.
I hear crazy predictions, but
yep.
the worst is yet to come. Not to sound somber, but, there's going to be a little bit more of an increase before we see any, green pastures ahead.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I constantly remind the audience, I say, hey, look, my first loan was at 8.75%. I was glad to get it. It was a long time ago. But at the same time, I was able to afford to pay it, and I was lucky to get the loan at the time. So rates being, let's say, 4.5% to 5% currently is still a pretty attractive loan in comparison to what's gone on, you know, historically in the loan market.
Well, yeah, and also talking about non-conforming loans really quick, is those took a big significant jump. So we're still seeing self-employed borrowers who can only qualify with bank statements, and they're taking 7% interest rates right now.
Right now.
And that's what we're seeing, yep. So we're selling 6.5% to 7.5% interest rates on that alternative product, which is very popular with the self-employed buyers now.
Yeah, I agree. And when I first saw that, it was about a week and a half ago that I saw 7%. And I was like, wow, that's a huge jump, because they were really rivaling, in some cases, your conventional loans, your conventional mortgages. And then all of a sudden, nope, risk too high. We're taking that particular rate off the table. Now you're paying, you know, what you're paying at 7.
Yeah, absolutely. And interesting, because when all prime came back in the market, those hard money lenders were like, oh, now they're taking all our business. Now hard money lenders now become more popular because their rates are back in line and they do it with a little bit more ease.
Right. Hey, April, we're up against the clock. Thanks for coming on once again. I really, really appreciate it. Always love hearing from you.
Wonderful. Thank you. You have a wonderful week. Thank you, Jeff.
Hey, do you want to shout out a number by which people, if they need information from Nations, they can contact you directly?
Absolutely. April Lopez, 818-398-1272.
Excellent. Thanks again. Thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Thank you. That's April Lopez from Nations Direct. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for coming to the show, to listening to what we have to say about mortgages. You know, if you really want to see us after the show or after the airtime on the radio, go to themortgagevoice.com. That's our website. You can hear latest shows. You can also do that on YouTube. But if you go to our website, themortgagevoice.com, you can see the guests, you can hear the guests, you can read about the guests, you can hear the programs, read a little bit about what we're trying to do in educating and also bringing people awareness as to what's going on, not only in the mortgage market, which is always and constantly changing, but also in some of the issues that affect the communities at large around your area and certainly across the country. And with me is a new person who has never been on the show, and I really appreciate her coming on today, is Arzo Yusuf. How are you? Arzo, how are you?
Hi, Jeff. I'm good, thanks. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you very much. I was looking at your TEDx, and I really appreciated, you know, you as a person and the story that you have, but I wanted to share with people who are listening to the show exactly who you are. I mean, it's almost, and it's trite to say, but American dreamish, where you come, you know, have nothing and build yourself to this position and importance and also, you know, something of relevance. I think that's a terrific story. If you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, and then I'll just drill down on what I really want to talk to you about.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the introduction.
Sure.
And it is. This is a little American dreamish.
Right.
I was born in Kabul, Afghanistan, in 1980 during the Soviet invasion, and my family and I left. I was a baby. We escaped and came to America as political asylum refugees. And like you said, we started from nothing here in America, and over the years, just try to learn what life in America is about, and to try to assimilate. And you know, my mom bought a house, and, you know, we just kind of lived a typical, or refugee slash American lifestyle as best as we could.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up pursuing accounting at USC, moved to Los Angeles, and went into operations management. And I just have kind of a bleeding heart for causes that affect youth and just people that are underprivileged, and just a lot of that has to do just with my own experience, my own background, and that got me into working with foster youth and learning about what happens and the fact that they get targeted by sex traffickers, and that led me to giving that TED Talk about what people can do to prevent and help youth in that circumstance. And I'm, you know, just really involved in that part of the community. I run a nonprofit that helps foster youth. I have a small business that I run it as a social impact company, and a portion of our proceeds benefits foster youth and sex trafficking survivors. And I've got plenty on my plate. And unfortunately, last summer, we had the Afghanistan crisis happen, which ended up bringing, I think, 50 to 70,000 refugees to the United States. And we've just, as a community, been really affected by that and working to help. And that's how you and I connected.
You know, interesting, yeah. I mean, not only is it interesting, but I, too, have an affinity for children at risk, probably from my own story as well. And I really respect the fact that you have, you know, come and really tried to do something. The first topic that you mentioned was child sex trafficking. Is it here in Los Angeles, or is it generally in the U.S., or how you are attacking it? How do you identify it? What's the prevention? Those sort of things.
Yeah, sure. That's a great question, and it's one of those things that when people hear the phrase sex trafficking, they automatically think a third world country, and they don't realize that it happens in Los Angeles. It happens in America. In the United States, 80% of sex trafficking victims are kids in foster care. So that has been kind of my awareness piece, that I think if more people knew about that, they would want to get involved and help foster youth and focus more on prevention, because once youth get caught up in sex trafficking, they are tricked into it, they're exploited, it's really hard to save them and rescue them from that.
Mm-hmm.
So the awareness and prevention is really, really key to providing more support services, more mentorship for foster youth to stop it from happening. And we have about 35,000 kids in foster care in Los Angeles County, which is about a third of California's entire foster care population. So if we can create some change here, we can really affect things on a national level.
When you're talking about prevention, are you saying that within the foster care system or within the foster care parents, there is some affiliation with these groups that exploit them? I'm just trying to clarify exactly where the problem starts and who.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So what happens is the foster care system itself is pretty broken. And the whole goal of foster care is actually to temporarily take a child away from their biological parents in order for their parents to get their life back on track. Usually kids fall into foster care because their parents are experiencing drugs and alcohol, or they have a mental health issue, or they're abusive or something. So they temporarily go to a foster family, and the goal is to get them back to their biological parents. Unfortunately, that often doesn't happen. And so these kids end up getting bounced around from foster home to foster home for various reasons. A lot of them will end up in a group home, which is kind of like a jail-like setting, although these kids never committed a crime. And so kids like this, they are very vulnerable because they don't have safe adult relationships, and traffickers know this, so they target them specifically. They will actually target them at group homes. They'll find out who they are at the schools, and they'll just try to befriend them, and they'll try to approach them, befriend them, offer them presents and gifts and things like that to establish trust. And once a young person who's in this, you know, horrible situation where they're not in a safe family setting, they're away from their parents, they're usually depressed, they have anxiety, they feel unloved, and someone's giving them attention, they're receptive to it.
Yep.
And so that's the beginning point of getting them involved in sex trafficking.
That's a heavy responsibility. And the fear of somebody like myself who really doesn't know much about it, I don't know anything about foster care, getting involved, how would one do that?
So there's definitely different ways. There's CASA programs, which are coin-appointed special advocates.
Okay.
And there are organizations in every county where somebody can sign up, they get a background check done, they do an application and a training program, and then they're committed to mentoring a foster youth for about a year. And they're connected to the foster youth, to the foster parents, the biological parents, the caseworker. So that's one way of going about it. There's also another way through some of the organizations I work with. One of them is called Simply Friends, and they have an education rights holder program where it's also similar to being a mentor. And then through my business, Sexy Boss Babe, that's the name of our beauty brand, we do workshops and mentorship where we'll go out to group homes and we'll do a little fun nail day where we'll apply quick nails to the youth, and
that
establishes a bond and a conversation. Yeah, and then from there, we're able to talk to them and empower them and share resources that they have access to that they otherwise wouldn't have known about. But there's lots of different ways of getting involved and helping without being a foster parent.
Okay, I want to shift gears quickly. I'm sorry we could spend an hour talking about what we've just talked about, but you also are involved somewhat in the Afghanistan relief or trying to help out the newly, and it must be overwhelming to just arrive on the shores of the U.S. and try to figure this place out. How do you help? What is the strategy? Is there a strategy towards helping these people assimilate or at least get started? The Afghans?
So that is definitely, yes. So that is definitely what everybody's working on. As far as the government itself, there is a lack of funding that existed from the Trump administration, and that significantly has hurt the immigration effort. So that part's challenging. A lot of the existing refugee relief organizations were closed down due to budget cuts. And so there's simply not enough caseworkers to even attend to the incoming refugees. So a lot of the grassroots community members like myself, other Afghans throughout the United States just stepped up on our own without any funding because these are people coming from our homeland. So we just all felt a sense of responsibility to do something. Mm-hmm. And people just reached out into the community and have been working with existing aid relief organizations that are working with the Afghan refugees and just offering a helping hand, whether it's picking them up from the airports, assisting with food, helping them with their cases. And one of the projects that I've got going right now, I've been able to establish an opportunity for a home for single refugee women from Afghanistan that need placement. And one of the challenges getting them placed in housing, as you can imagine, is the cosigner aspect of it. If they don't have a job and they don't have a cosigner, how can you get them into a house?
Right.
So that ends up being a challenge. But we're trying to find landlords that are willing to work with them. A lot of them, they're responsible, they're motivated, they want to get work. So we're helping them with job placement. We're helping them learn about life in America so that they can assimilate, so that they can at some point get off of their government dependency and have independent lives.
You know, you've got a lot going on. And I really thank you for jumping in two causes that really need attention. How does one get a hold of you or a way by which to donate to either one of these causes?
Absolutely. Thank you for that. So if anyone is interested in getting involved to help us in our effort with helping the Afghan refugees, they can go to our website. It's helptheafghans.org, www.helptheafghans.org. And then to connect with me, all of my websites for my business, for the foster care sex trafficking workshops, they can connect with me directly through arzoyusuf.com, A-R-Z-O-Y-U, S like Sam, U, F like Frank.com, arzoyusuf.com.
Arzo, thank you very much. I want to have you back. I want to see what the progress is and see how we can help possibly get the word out for you. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. It's Arzo Yusuf, and she is helping in a number of different fronts, whether it's child sex trafficking through the foster care system or whether it's helping Afghan refugees. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in. If you want to see and hear what we do each and every week, go to The Mortgage Voice, and that's on mortgagevoice.com. That's our website. You can see and hear a lot of what we do on the radio show, as well as look up some of the guests that have been on the show. If you like what you hear by a guest and you want to go to the website, themortgagevoice.com, you can go there, see who it is, and obviously you can give them a call, give them an email, however you do want to do it. We also are on YouTube. We shoot the show for TV, YouTube's sake, and we've been doing it for a lot of years. We're up into, hundreds of shows that we've got down there. So this particular show, as well as all all the past shows, you can go to youtube.com and join the crowd that's already there watching what we do each and every week. Really appreciate it if you do that. The more you like us, the more we can get the message out to a lot of different people. There is information that isn't selling you anything, and that's what we try to do. Information is king, especially in the real estate and in the mortgage world. As the rates continue to rise, as things continue to evolve in the real estate industry, one source you can go to, and that's us. Now, I go to a number of other. Housing Wire is one. I go to the Mortgage News Daily. That's another one. Everybody's got their own little way that they can go after the news, what's really happening. So with that being what it said, thank you very much for coming. I'm Jeff Barton, and this is The Mortgage Voice. Let's get right to the news to use section that we come to each and every week on the show. We talk about some topics in general about what's happening in the business. Let's see, the Fed funds rate. The Fed is about nine, actually is more than nine, but there are nine voting members on the Fed, and they come from different cities around the country. So the Dallas guy who is currently, I don't have his name right in front of me. I don't know why. I have to get on my assistant for that. But they are saying, and I tend to agree with them, the Fed's Fed funds rate, which is the short-term borrowing that the Fed does to member banks, will be 2.25 to 2.5% by the year end. In general, it can affect the mortgage interest rates by going higher. That and, of course, the 10-year, both of these things we look at, as well as, you know, flight to safety and a bunch of other things that might drive the rates down. But what we have currently is, you know, a rate-building environment that does not look to stop simply because inflation's been too high. And we all know that. Nobody wants to spend $6 a gallon of gas, and yes, that's what we pay here in California. So anybody who's not in California listening to the show, that's our wonderful affiliates down in Albuquerque and certainly up in Las Vegas, Nevada. Guess what? We spend a ton of dough out here on our gasoline, yet it doesn't seem to slow. Although this week, it was kind of slow. I don't know. Did you notice that, John, out there in the highway?
Yeah, I think it's starting to slow down a little bit. Yeah. Although it's spring break, I think a lot of people are also gone.
Oh, you know what? That's a good point. Yeah. Spring break, I forget.
But after a while, at $6 a gallon, you can only afford so much.
Right, exactly. You're going to pick a destination, go there, and that's it. You're not cruising all summer.
No.
I agree. And then we're flying, my family and I, we're flying back east. My daughter graduated from college, so we're going to do that trick. And you know what? The fuel cost, the surcharge that they're adding on all the tickets, yeah, it makes it really difficult to get around. Okay, some lenders won't survive. We talked about this in the previous section of the show. That's true. And one of the things that that got me thinking about is, okay, who are the major lenders? And who are the, you know, because there's a difference between Wells Fargo at the corner. And by the way, Wells Fargo was busted earlier. Bloomberg News did a terrific expose or article or investigative journalistic review of Wells Fargo and their particular practices on lending to minorities, specifically the African-American community, found that they are only approving 50% or less of African-American refinances back in 20 and 21. Unbelievable, right? And you say, well, what's the big deal? What is it in comparison? Well, in comparison to, let's say, white borrowers, 72% of white borrowers in 2020 and 79% of white borrowers in 2021. So over, you know, 20, almost 30% more borrowers that are white get approved than those that are black. That's Wells Fargo. They get busted. But anyway, back to this list that I was talking about in terms of, you know, who are the lenders? Who are the major lenders in the country? Wells Fargo is a bank, but also United Wholesale or Rocket Pro. They're also lenders, but they're not banks. So I drug it up. You like that word? I found where it was, and here are the top 10. Okay, Rocket Mortgage is number one. They're the number one loan originator in the U.S. United Wholesale, number two. These are two non-banks. Wells Fargo, the dreaded Wells Fargo we just talked about, is number three. Loan Depot is number four. Again, another non-bank. J.P. Morgan Chase, number five. And I don't know if anyone follows Jamie Dimon, who is the CEO and has been forever at Chase Manhattan. J.P. Morgan Chase. Interesting guy. I mean, if you want to follow just him, you can Google him and just read the articles that he talks about the economy, what's happening with inflation. He's a very smart guy, and he is pretty direct in terms of what he thinks about what's going on. It's a good read. You should look him up. Number six is Newrez Investment Corporation. Now, two banks or two mortgage lenders merged. It was New Res and Caliber. Both merged to form New Res Investment Corp. So that's number six. Number seven is Freedom. Eight is Bank of America, another bank. Home Point is nine, and Guaranteed Rate is 10. Okay, so as you can see, six out of 10 of these were not banks. They are mortgage lenders or mortgage bankers. They're non-depository people. And the interesting thing here is that the non-depository group as a whole, maybe not these sized people in the top 10, they're the ones most at risk because we've lost the refi. Know what I mean? Lost the refi? Well, unless you've got need for money in the equity in your house, there is no reason that you need to refi off a 3% loan, right? I mean, let's think about it for a second. Now, obviously, there are many reasons to do that, and we talked about it last week about what's the best way to move forward. Should we refi the whole thing? Should we do a second, or should we do a HELOC? And we talked about that. But these type of lenders, and the company that sponsors this show, Malibu Funding Inc., is also a mortgage lender. And they also have issues with what happens when the refis dry up. Now, we saw $4.5 trillion worth of mortgages last year. And over 50 to 60% of that was refi. Well, if you cut the refis in half, or really by 60%, that means that you're cutting $4.5 trillion down to about $3 trillion. That means $1.5 trillion. So what happens to all those lenders that had geared up, hired people, underwriters, setup people, anybody in the services department, anybody in compliance? And there we're talking thousands and thousands of people, really qualified people in these particular industries who may be in, you know, in danger of losing their jobs. And that's what, you know, a lot of the people in the industry look towards. Now, we've been through this? Yes, we have. Have we been through it many times? I personally been around since, I said, in the 80s. Yes, I've been through it several times. And I remember back in 09 watching the dust balls roll across the floor as I was trying to figure out how I was going to pay the rent. Now, this was after 08 and the huge, obviously, mortgage meltdown that we all had. And everybody got blamed in that, and appropriately so. But in this particular pullback from it, it has to do with killing inflation, raising the rates, raising the Fed funds rate, and being able to control inflation, because really that's way more important, especially to the Fed and to the politicians, by the way, because that's the only thing anybody ever talks about. And it's not about whether you got a good job, whether you're able to pay your mortgage, whether, you know, healthcare, hundreds of other things that might be good. If you're paying more this year for food and gas than you were last year, it's a problem. So it's a problem for these people who are in charge. Anyway, let's get to some more of this news to use section. Worst time ever to buy a house? That's the question I pose. Let's look at two things. One, cost, and two, the availability of funds. Well, that's a on both of them, because the cost of the home has never been higher, really. And the availability of funds, yeah, is getting less and less. A couple more, and then we'll get out of here. Let's see. Oh, yeah, I already did the Wells Fargo thing. We already ragged on the Wells Fargo people. Okay, just quickly, I got about 40 seconds left. I'm going to go through a little history of what happened to the rates since 2000. In 2000, 8.75% was the 30-year fix. 2005, 6%. 2010, 4 to 5%. 2015, 3 to 4%. 2020, 2 to 3%. Notice how my voice is getting lower too. And 2022, 4 to 5%. Well, we may even see 6% this year. This is kind of the history of the way things are. And as I said, back in whenever I bought my first house, it was 8.75%. So rates are still reasonable enough. If you can afford it, I'd buy now. Anyway, I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for listening to the show, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For more on today's topic, visit www.malibufunding.net.